Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to the Intelligent Design the Future podcast. This is Casey Luskin broadcasting from the Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. And actually, today I'm not in the Center for Science and Culture. I'm on a short little road trip at the north end of town with a signer of Discovery Institute's Descent from Darwinism list, also a friend of mine, Dr. Lyle Jensen.
Yes.
Dr. Jensen has been quite an accomplished scientist in his career, and we're actually going to do a series of six podcasts with him, going through his career as a scientist, all the way up through his views on evolution and how evolution should be taught. Be sure that you keep listening for the next six podcasts, and I promise you that they will get more and more interesting as they go along, and we will conclude with Dr. Jensen's lifelong views on evolution and some very interesting things here. So first, a little bit about Dr. Jensen. He is a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. This is different from being just a member of the AAAS. You have to be chosen to become a fellow because of your accomplishments as a scientist. He's also a fellow of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, which is another elected position, which is quite an honor. He is today Professor Emeritus at the University of Washington. In his last 10 years there, he was actually in two departments. He held a position in the Department of Biological Structure and the Department of Biochemistry. I'm sure that meant a lot of departmental meetings. Is that right, Lyle? Okay. Just a little bit more about his own career. In 1983, he was awarded the Van Kuchen Memorial Award in X-ray crystallography, and in 2000 received the Martin J. Berger Award, both from the American Crystallographic Association. So that's a little sneak preview of some of his accomplishments in his career. He is one of the pioneers in the field of X-ray crystallography, where if you are a chemist, especially a protein chemist, you live and breathe based upon this data and this kind of work. So, but first, before we get into that, I want to get into a little bit of Dr. Jensen's background and how he got interested in science originally. Dr. Jensen, thank you very much for being with us today on this podcast. My first question is just, where did you grow up and what part of the country did you grow up in?
Well, I was born on a farm near Stanwood, Washington, a little town about 50 miles north of Seattle.
So you've lived in the state of Washington for a very large portion of your life.
Most of it.
Most of it, but not all of it, as we'll learn. So I think an interesting question for our listeners would be, how did you growing up on a fairly rural farm in the 1920s, how did you get so interested in science and go on to become such an accomplished scientist in your career? What was it that first got you inspired to not follow in the footsteps of being a farmer, but actually go on to the university and get your PhD and do what you did? What got you interested in science originally?
Well, I think some of the interest, maybe it's genetic, I'm not sure, but I remember when about 1927, Puget Sound Power and Light, as it was known at the time, was extending their electric lines out into the country. And the little road where our farm was located, I remember when they put in the light poles and electricity came through. We kept a kerosene lamp for our light, but now we had electric power. I was immediately interested in the electric power, first of all, just for the simple reason that lights were so much more effective than the old kerosene lamps, which got smoky chimneys and you had to clean them all the time, and they were also a fire hazard. But here was this electricity, and I was interested in that. It turned out as I went on that in the high school, when I got beyond grade school, it was in the junior year when I took physics, and I found myself very interested, particularly the electricity and magnetism part of the book, where it gave you the right-hand rule, for instance, that if you had a direct current, if you wrapped your fingers around the direct power line, that your thumb pointed in the with your thumb pointing in the direction that the electricity was flowing,
right,
then your fingers were pointing in the direction of the magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
that would change with the change of electricity. And I was very interested in that because magnetism, of course, follows along with the electric part of it. And I found it fascinating, and because there were so many practical things in the physics book that bore on problems on the phone. But it wasn't until the next year when I took chemistry, and in the little high school, physics and chemistry were taught on alternate years. But in the very first part of the chemistry book, here was a picture of the idea that atoms had electrons around each atom and the periodic table, and I won't go into the details of it, but the electrons that showed up in the picture of some of the atoms tied in with my interest in electricity from physics. And I decided when I was a senior in high school that if I ever had a chance to go on, it was going to be chemistry would be my major interest, and math and physics would be the related interest, and I would minor in both of them.
So you knew you were destined to become a chemist from fairly early on. That was what your heart was set on.
Yeah. I had no idea how useful chemistry would be at the time. It was simply my interest.
Well, Lyle, I actually want to take it back even a few years before your high school studies. When you were younger as a young boy, I understand that you had an interest in astronomy, and this was something that was given to you from your father. Is that right?
Well, there was a little book that was published around 1920 or thereabouts, and out on the farm. There was no competition with city lights, and on a clear evening you could see the Big Dipper and the North Star and Orion and the Pleiades. And in this little book, it showed a number of these little combinations with a little description, and down below was a little statement, "I found this on," and you were to record when you first saw this and identified it. And it was that my father would take me out, and this was around 1920 or 21. And I remember particularly identifying the Big Dipper and Orion and the Pleiades and other constellations.
And how old were you in 1920 and 21? You were...
Well, I turned 5 years old on November 24th of 1920.
Okay. One of the things I want our listeners to know, and you can do the math and calculate Dr. Jensen's age pretty easily here, but he has a memory better than anyone I know of any age whatsoever. Okay, well, one last question for now. I know a lot of times when I was a kid, I would mix things up and I would make weird-smelling chemicals that would give me headaches and set things on fire. Were you like that, you know, playing with chemicals as a kid or doing experiments?
Well, I did some when I was in high school in chemistry, where you did one experiment where if you took an acid like hydrochloric acid and put zinc in it, you would bubble off hydrogen. But I found out later in the course that if you took ordinary lye, which is sodium hydroxide, and if you treated it, I think it was with zinc, that you also could generate hydrogen that way.
Okay.
These were things that you had on the farm. We didn't have anything like H hydrochloric acid around the home, and that's good we didn't. But lye is a common thing. And I don't recall the source of the zinc, but I found out that I could generate hydrogen just in the old woodshed. And this I did. And I knew it was explosive. But during the Depression, we didn't have money to buy various things, but you could buy a compound that you could put on shoes, for instance, to make the soles last longer. And I could make a cork out of that, is what it amounted to. And then I could generate a little bit of hydrogen. But it turned out that I had fixed up a device where I think I had gotten a little piece of glass tube where you let the hydrogen come out under water, and it'll just bubble right up and then go into the air. But if you have a match, well, you can hold it above where the bubbles come out.
Oh, yeah.
And you get a nice little explosion.
Great.
I didn't take account of the fact that this solo, as it was for souls, that I'd made this stopper with, and it was leaking some hydrogen around it. And I didn't think about that. I was looking right down, and I was on the floor, and it turned out that as I had taken a match and was going to light, and was lighting these bubbles as they came up, that I didn't think about any, that the cork might not be totally tight.
Yeah.
And it turned out it wasn't totally tight. There was just enough of it that it ignited and went back through, and it exploded.
Oh, boy.
But I was right over it like this, but nothing came up in my face. It all went all over.
Oh, wow.
And, of course, what had happened is that the little explosion blown a little bottle apart and spread glass particles.
Yeah.
But it was a matter of was sweeping up.
Wow.
Later, I can tell you two more stories about hydrogen, but this is enough for the time.
Thank you very much, Dr. Jensen. That's what I wanted, a good story about blowing things up. Kids, don't try this at home. But this is Dr. Lyle Jensen. We're interviewing him for the ID the Future podcast. This is part one of six. We'll be going on to talk more about his career as a scientist, his accomplishments, and his very interesting views on Darwin's theory of evolution. So thank you very much, Dr. Jensen.
Yes.
This is Casey Luskin signing off. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Bennett. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.